Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Elantris, Part 2. Created by Brandon Sanderson. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Tony Penny, Jason Stiles, Thomas Simpson, Tony Nahl, Elizabeth Jernigan, Kate Foster, Tim Getman, Sherry Simpson, Mary McGowan, Casey Platt, Jonathan Watkins, Michael Glenn, Eric Messner, Colleen Delaney, Susan Linsky, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, and Dylan Lynch. Elantris, Part 2.
Raoden had once tried to set Ayin free. He had been a young boy then, simple of mind, but pure of intention. He had been learning about slavery from one of his tutors, and had somehow gotten it into his mind that Saeons were being held against their will. He had gone to Ayin tearfully that day, demanding that the Saeon accept his freedom.
I am free, young master.
No, you're not. You're a slave. You do whatever people tell you.
I do it because I want to, Raoden.
Why? Don't you want to be free?
I want to serve, young master. My freedom is to be here with you.
I don't understand.
You look at things as a human, young master. You see rank and distinction. You try to order the world so that everything has a place either above you or beneath you. To a Saeon, there is no above or beneath. There are only those we love, and those we serve, and we serve those we love.
But you don't even get paid.
But I do, young master. My payment is that of a father's pride and a mother's love. My wages come from the satisfaction of seeing you grow.
It had been many years before Raoden understood those words, but they had always remained in his mind. As he had grown and learned, listening to countless Carathi sermons on the unifying power of love, Raoden had come to see Saeons in a new way. Not as servants, or even as friends, but as something much more deep and more powerful. It was as if the Saeons were an expression of Domai himself, reflections of God's love for his people. Through their service, they were much closer to heaven than their supposed masters could ever really understand.
You're finally free, my friend.
Raoden smiled wanly as he watched Ayin float and bob. He still hadn't been able to get even a flicker of recognition from the Saeon, though Ayin did seem to stay in Raoden's general vicinity. Whatever the Sheod had done to Ayin, it had taken away more than just his voice. It had broken his mind.
I think I know what's wrong with him.
Galadon sat in the shade a short distance away. They were on a rooftop a few buildings down from the chapel, ejected from their habitual place of study by an apologetic Kaehaer.
The Saeon?
Raoden nodded, lying on his stomach near the edge of what was once a garden wall, still watching Ayin.
His Aeon isn't complete.
Ayin, that's healing, Golo?
That's right. Except his Aeon isn't complete anymore. There are tiny breaks in its lines and patches of weakness in its color.
Raoden watched Ayin for a few more moments before turning back to his study of the Aeon door book.
What do you miss most, Sul?
Miss most? About the outside?
Kolo, what one thing would you bring here to Elantris if you could?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. What about you?
My house. I built it myself, Sul. Felled every tree, worked every board, and pounded every nail. It was beautiful. No mansion or palace can compete with the work of one's own hands.
Raoden nodded, imagining the cabin in his mind. What had he owned that he missed the most strongly? He had been the son of a king, and had therefore had many possessions. The answer he came up with, however, surprised him.
Letters. I'd bring a stack of letters.
Letters, Sewell? From whom?
A girl.
A woman, Sewell? I never figured you for the romantic type.
Just because I don't mope around dramatically like a character from one of your Dulaudan romances doesn't mean I don't think about such things.
Don't get Delos due on me, Sewell. I'm just surprised. Who was this girl?
I was going to marry her.
Must have been some woman.
Must have been. I wish I could have met her.
You never met her?
No. Hence the letters, my friend. She lived in Teod. She was the king's daughter, as a matter of fact. She started sending me letters about a year ago. She was a beautiful writer. Her words were laced with such wit that I couldn't help but respond. We continued to write for the better part of 5 months. Then, she proposed.
She proposed to you?
Unabashedly. It was, of course, politically motivated. Serini wanted a firm union between Teod and Eirilon.
And you accepted?
It was a good opportunity. Ever since the Riod, Teod has kept its distance from Eirilon. Besides, those letters were intoxicating. This last year has been difficult. My father seems determined to run Eirilon to its ruin, and he is not a man who suffers dissent with patience. But whenever it seemed that my burdens were too great, I would get a letter from Serini. She had a say on, too. And after the engagement was formalized, we began to speak regularly. She would call in the evenings, her voice drifting from Aene to captivate me. We left the link open for hours sometimes.
What was that you said about not moping around like a character from a romance?
So, there you have it. If I could have anything, I'd want those letters. I was actually excited about the marriage, even if the union was just a reaction to the Dorethi invasion of Duladel.
What was that you just said, Raoden?
Oh, about the letters?
No, about Duladel.
Raoden paused. Galadon had claimed to have entered Elantris a few months ago, but Dulas were known for understatement. The Duladan Republic had fallen just over 6 months previously.
I assumed you knew.
What, Sewell? Assumed I knew what?
I'm sorry, Galadon. The Dulaudan Republic collapsed.
No.
There was a revolution, like the one in Eirilon 10 years ago, but even more violent. The Republican class was completely destroyed and a monarchy was instituted.
Impossible. The Republic was strong. We all believed in it so much.
Things change, my friend.
Not the Republic, Sewell. We all got to choose who ruled. Why rise up against that?
I don't know. Not much information escaped. It was a chaotic time in Duladel, which is why the Fjordel priests were able to step in and seize power.
That means Eirilon is in trouble. We were always there to keep the Dorethi away from your borders.
I realize that.
What happened to Jeskar? My religion, what happened to it?
Raoden simply shook his head.
You have to know something!
Shudarith is the state religion in Duladel now. I'm sorry.
It's gone, then.
There are still the mysteries.
The mysteries are not the same thing as Jeskar, Sewell. They are a mockery of things sacred. A perversion. Only outsiders, those without any sort of true understanding of the door, practice the mysteries.
Raoden left his hand on the grieving man's shoulder, unsure how to comfort him.
I thought you knew.
Galadon simply stared absently, with morose eyes. Raoden left Galadon on the rooftop. The large doula wanted to be alone with his grief. Unsure what else to do, Raoden returned to the chapel, distracted by his thoughts. He didn't remain distracted for long.
Kaehaer, it's beautiful.
The old man looked up from the corner he had been cleaning. There was a deep look of pride on his face. The chapel was empty of sludge. All that remained was clean, whitish-gray marble. Sunlight flooded through the western windows, reflecting off the shiny floor and illuminating the entire chapel with an almost divine brilliance. Shallow reliefs covered nearly every surface. Only half an inch deep, the detailed sculptures had been lost in the sludge. Raoden ran his fingers across one of the tiny masterpieces, the expressions on the people's faces so detailed as to be lifelike.
Oh, they're amazing.
I didn't even know they were there, my lord.
I didn't see them until I started cleaning. And then they were lost in the shadows until I finished the floor. The marble is so smooth, it could be a mirror. And the windows are placed just right to catch the light.
And the reliefs run all around the room?
Yes, my lord. Actually, this isn't the only building that has them. You'll occasionally run across a wall or a piece of furniture with carvings on it. They were probably common in Elantris before the Riode.
It was the city of the gods, Kaer.
The old man smiled. His hands were black with grime, and a half dozen ragged cleaning cloths hung from his sash. But he was happy.
What next, my lord?
Our people have started living in the nearby buildings, Kaer. What good will all your cleaning here do if they track slime in every time we meet?
Kaer nodded thoughtfully.
The cobblestones are a problem. This is a big project, my lord.
His eyes, however, were not daunted.
I know, but it is a desperate one. A people who live in filth will feel like filth. If we are ever going to rise above our opinions of ourselves, we're going to need to be clean. Can you do it?
Yes, my lord.
Good. I'll assign you some workers to speed the process.
Raoden's band had grown enormously over the last few days, as the people of Elantris had heard of Karate's merger with him. Many of the random, ghost-like Elantrians who wandered the streets alone had begun to make their way to Raoden's band, seeking fellowship as a final desperate attempt to avoid madness. Kaer turned to go, his wrinkled face turning around the chapel one last time, admiring it with satisfaction.
Kaer!
Yes, my lord?
Do you know what it is? The secret.
I haven't been hungry in days, my lord. It is the most amazing feeling in the world. I don't even notice the pain anymore.
Raoden nodded, and Kaer left. The man had come looking for a magical solution to his woes, but he had found an answer much more simple. Pain lost its power when other things became more important. Kaer didn't need a potion or an aeon to save him. He just needed something to do. Raoden strolled through the glowing room, admiring the different sculptures. He paused, however, when he reached the end of a particular relief. The stone was blank for a short section, its white surface polished by Kaer's careful hand. It was so clean, in fact, that Raoden could see his reflection. He was stunned. The face that stared out of the marble was unknown to him. He had wondered why so few people recognized him. He had been Prince of Aerilon, his face known even in many of the outer plantations. He had assumed that the Elantrians simply didn't expect to find a prince in Elantris, so they didn't think to associate spirit with Raoden. However, now that he saw the changes in his face, he realized that there was another reason people didn't recognize him. There were hints in his features, clues to what had been. The changes, however, were drastic. Only 2 weeks had passed, but his hair had already fallen out. He had the usual Elantris blotches on his skin, but even the parts that had been flesh-toned a few weeks ago had turned a flat gray. His skin was wrinkling slightly, especially around the lips, and his eyes were beginning to take on a sunken look. Once, before his own transformation, he had envisioned the Elantrians as living corpses, their flesh rotting and torn. That wasn't the case. Elantrians retained their flesh and most of their figure, though their skin wrinkled and darkened. They were more withering husks than they were decaying corpses. Yet even though the transformation wasn't as drastic as he had once assumed, it was still a shock to see it in himself.
We are a sorry people, are we not?
Raoden looked up. He saw Galadon standing in the doorway. He smiled encouragingly.
Not as bad as we could be, my friend. I can get used to the changes.
Your cleaning man does good work, Sul. This place looks almost free from the Riode.
The most beautiful thing, my friend, is the way it freed its cleanser in the process.
Galadon nodded, looking out at the large crew of people who were clearing the chapel's garden area.
They've been coming in droves, haven't they, Sul?
They hear that we offer something more than life in an alley. We don't even have to watch the gates anymore. Karate brings us everyone she can rescue.
How do you intend to keep them all busy? That garden is big, and it's nearly completely cleared.
Elantris is a very large city, my friend. We'll find things to keep them occupied. Speaking of jobs, I have something I need you to do.
Something to keep my mind off the pain, Sul?
You could think that. However, this project is a little more important than cleaning sludge.
Raoden waved Galadon to follow as he walked to the back corner of the room and pried a loose stone from the wall. He reached inside and pulled out a dozen small bags of corn.
As a farmer, how would you judge the grade of this seed?
Galadon picked up a kernel with interest, turning it over in his hands a few times, testing its color and its hardness.
Not bad. Not the best I've seen, but not bad.
The planting season is almost here, isn't it?
Considering how warm it's been lately, I'd say it's here already.
Good. This corn won't last long in this hole, and I don't trust leaving it out in the open.
It won't work, Sewell. Farming takes time before it brings rewards. Those people will pull up and eat the first little sprouts they see.
I don't think so. Their minds are changing, Galadon. They can see that they don't have to live as animals anymore.
There isn't enough room for a decent crop. It will be little more than a garden.
There's enough space to plant this little amount. Next year we'll have more corn, and then we can worry about room. I hear the palace gardens were rather large. We could probably use those.
The problem in that statement, Sewell, is the part about next year. There won't be a next year, Golo. People in Elantris don't last that long.
Elantris will change. If not, then those who come here after us will plant the next season.
I still doubt it will work.
You'd doubt the sun's rising if you weren't proven wrong each day. Just give it a try.
All right, Sewell.
Remember, the past need not become our future as well.
Galadon nodded, putting the corn back in its hiding place.
We won't need this for another few days. I'm going to have to figure out a way to plow that garden.
Lord Spirit!
Saolin stood in a makeshift watchtower he had constructed himself.
Someone is coming!
Raoden stood, and Galadon hurriedly replaced the stone. A moment later, one of Karate's men burst into the room.
My lord! Lady Karate begs your presence immediately!
You are a fool, Daishi!
Daishi, the extremely large, well-muscled man who was her second in command, simply continued to strap on his weapons. Raoden and Galadon stood confused at the doorway to the palace. At least 10 of the men in the entryway, a full 2/3 of Karate's followers, looked as if they were preparing for battle.
You can continue to dream with your new friend, Karate, but I will wait no longer. Especially not as long as that man threatens the children.
Raoden edged closer to the conversation, pausing beside a thin-limbed, anxious man named Horeen. Horeen was the type who avoided conflict, and Raoden guessed that he was neutral in this argument.
What's happening?
One of Daishi's scouts overheard Ehinden planning to attack our palace tonight. Daishi has wanted to strike at Ehinden for months now, and this is just the excuse he needed.
You're leading these men into something far worse than death, Daishi. Ehinden has more people than you do.
He doesn't have weapons. All that university held was books, and he already ate those.
Think about what you are doing.
I have, Karate. Ehinden is a madman. We cannot rest while he shares our border. If we strike unexpectedly, then we can stop him permanently. Only then will the children be safe.
With that, Daishi turned to his grim band of would-be soldiers and nodded. The group moved out the door with purposeful strides.
This is worse than suicide, Spirit.
I know. We're so few, we can't afford to lose a single man. Not even those who follow Ehinden. We have to stop this.
He's already gone. I know Daishi well. There's no stopping him now.
I refuse to accept that, Karate.
Sewell, if you don't mind my asking, what in Dolokin are you planning?
Raoden loped along beside Galadon and Karate, barely keeping up with the two.
I have no idea. I'm still working on that part.
I figured as much.
Karate, what route will Daishi take?
There's a building that runs up against the university. Its far wall collapsed a while ago, and some of the stones knocked a hole in the university wall that abuts. I'm sure Daishi will try to get in there. He assumes Ehinden doesn't know about the breach.
Take us there, but take a different route. I don't want to run into Daishi.
Karate nodded, leading them down a side street. The building she mentioned was a low, single-story structure. One of the walls had been built so close to the university that Raoden was at a loss to guess what the architect had been thinking. The building had not fared well over the years, although it still had its roof, which was sagging horribly. The entire structure seemed on the edge of collapse. They approached apprehensively, poking their heads through a doorway. The building was open on the inside. They stood near the center of the rectangular structure, the collapsed wall a short distance to their left, another doorway a short distance to their right.
Burning Dolokhin, I don't trust this.
Neither do I.
No, it's more than that. Look, Sul.
Galadon pointed to the building's inner support beams. Looking closely, Raoden recognized the marks of fresh cuts in the already weakened wood.
This entire place is rigged to fall. It appears as if Aendin is better informed than Daishi assumed. Maybe Daishi will notice the danger and use a different entrance.
Daishi is a good man, but very single-minded. He'll march right through this building without bothering to look up.
Don't worry.
Raoden knelt beside the doorframe to think. He soon ran out of time, however, as Daishi appeared in the doorway on the far side to Raoden's right. Raoden was halfway between Daishi and the fallen wall.
Daishi, stop! This is a trap! The building is rigged to collapse!
Daishi halted, half of his men already in the building.
Attack my soldiers! Attack!
A group of men appeared behind the rubble. One, bearing Aendin's familiar mustached face, held a worn fire axe in his hands. Aendin jumped into the room, axe raised toward the support pillar.
Tayain! Stop!
Aendin stopped his axe in mid-swing, shocked at the sound of his real name.
Don't try to reason with him!
Daishi pulled his men from the room.
He's insane.
No, I don't think he is. This man is not insane, just confused.
Aendin blinked a few times, his hands growing tense on the axe handle. Raoden searched desperately for a solution, and his eyes fell on the remnants of a large stone table near the center of the room. Raoden stood and walked into the building. Raoden looked at Aendin, who stood with the axe prepared to swing. His eyes followed Raoden into the center of the room.
I'm right, am I not? You aren't mad. I heard you babbling insanely at your court, but anyone can babble. An insane man doesn't think to boil parchment for food, and a madman doesn't have the foresight to plant a trap.
I am not Tain, I am Aendin, Baron of Elantris!
If you wish.
Raoden took the remnants of his sleeve and wiped it against the top of the fallen table.
Though I can't imagine why you would rather be Aendin than Tain. This is, after all, Elantris.
I know that.
Do you? Do you really understand what it means to live in Elantris, the city of the gods?
Raoden turned toward the table, still wiping, his back to Aendin.
Elantris. City of beauty, city of art, and city of sculpture.
Raoden stepped back, revealing the now clean tabletop. It was covered with intricate carvings, just like the walls of the chapel. Aendin's eyes opened wide, the axe drooping in his hand.
This city is a stone carver's dream, Tayain. How many artists did you hear on the outside complain about the lost beauty of Elantris? These buildings are amazing monuments to the art of sculpture. I want to know who, when faced with such opportunity, would choose to be Aendin the Baron instead of Tayain the Sculptor.
Aendin's face was stunned.
Look at the wall next to you, Tayain.
The man turned, his fingers brushing against a relief hidden in slime. His sleeve came up, his arm quivering as he buffed away the slime.
Merciful Domai, it's beautiful.
Think of the opportunity, Tayain. Only you, out of all the sculptors in the world, can see Elantris. Only you can experience its beauty and learn from its masters. You are the luckiest man in Opalon.
A trembling hand ripped the mustache away.
And I would have destroyed it. I would have knocked it down.
Aendin bowed his head and collapsed in a heap. Raoden noticed the danger wasn't over. Aendin's squad of men was armed with stones and steel rods. Daishi and his people entered the room again.
Stop!
They halted, but warily.
What are you people doing? Hasn't Tayain's realization taught you anything?
Step aside, spirit.
I will not. I asked you a question. Did you learn nothing from what just happened?
We aren't sculptors.
That doesn't matter. Don't you understand the opportunity you have living in Elantris? We have a chance here that no one outside can ever achieve. We are free.
Free?
Yes, free. For eternity, man has struggled just to fill his mouth. Food is life's one desperate pursuit, the first and the last thought of carnal minds.
Before a person can dream, he must eat. And before he can love, he must fill his stomach. But we are different. At the price of a little hunger, we can be loose from the bonds that have held every living thing since time began.
Weapons lowered slightly, though Raoden couldn't be certain if they were considering his words or just confused by them.
Why fight? Why worry about killing? Outside, they fight for wealth. Wealth that is ultimately used to buy food. They fight for land. Land to raise food. Eating is the source of all struggle. But we have no needs. Our bodies are cold. We barely need clothing or shelter to warm us. And they continue on even when we don't eat. It's amazing! Those weapons in your hands, those belong to the outside world. They have no purpose in Elantris. Titles and class, those are ideas for another place. Listen to me! There are so few of us that we can't afford to lose a single one of you. Is it really worth it? An eternity of pain in exchange for a few moments of released hatred?
I will join you. I thought I had to be mad to live in Elantris, but madness was what kept me from seeing the beauty. Put down your weapons, men.
The men balked at the order.
I said put them down. I still lead here.
Baron Aeyndin ruled us.
Aeyndin was a fool. And so was anyone who followed him. Listen to this man. There is more royalty in his argument than there ever was in my pretend court.
Give up your anger, and let me give you hope instead.
Daishi's sword fell to the stones.
I cannot kill today.
He turned to leave. Daishi's men regarded Aeyndin's group for a moment, then joined their leader. The sword sat abandoned in the center of the room.
Whoever you are, thank you.
Come with me, Tehan. There is a building you should see.
Serini strode into the palace dance hall, a long black bag on her shoulder.
What?
It's your clothing, dear. These women aren't accustomed to such things.
It looks like men's clothing.
Siaden's double chin jiggled indignantly. Serini looked down at her gray jumpsuit with surprise.
Well, you didn't really expect us to fight in dresses, did you?
However, after studying the women's faces, she realized that that was exactly what they had expected.
You have a long way to go here, cousin.
Lucel, what are you doing here?
I fully expect this to be the most entertaining experience of the week.
Lucel reclined in his chair and put his hands behind his head.
I wouldn't miss it for all the gold in Wern's coffers.
Me too.
The small girl pushed her way past Serini and scuttled toward the chairs.
I'm sorry, I was stuck with them.
Be nice to your siblings, dear.
Yes, mother.
Slightly put off by the sudden audience, Serini turned to her prospective students. Every woman from the embroidery circle had come, even the stately Deora and the equally scatterbrained Queen Ishane. Serini's clothing and actions might have mortified them, but their hunger for independence was greater than their indignation. Serini allowed the bag to slide off her shoulder and into her hands. One side opened up with some snaps, and she reached inside to whip out one of her practice swords.
This is a sire. It's also called a kimir, or a jadaver, depending on which country you're in. The swords were first crafted in Je'edor as light weapons for scouts, but they fell into disuse after only a few decades. Then, however, the swords were adopted by Je'edorian nobility, who favored them for their grace and delicacy. Duels are common in Je'edor, and the quick, neat style of sire fencing requires a great deal of skill. The duelers were the first ones to turn fencing into a sport rather than a means of killing the man who decided to woo the same woman as yourself. They placed this little knob on the tip and dulled the blade's edge. The sport soon became quite popular amongst the Republicans. Dueler neutrality usually kept the country out of war, and so a form of fighting that didn't have martial applications appealed to them. Along with the dulled edge and tip, they added rules that forbid the striking of certain body parts. Fencing skipped Eirilon, where the Elantrians frowned upon anything resembling combat, but was very well received in Teod, with one notable change. It became a woman's sport. The Teoish men prefer more physical contests, such as jousting or broadsword fencing. For a woman, however, the sire is perfect. The light blade allows us to make full use of our dexterity and allows us to capitalize on our superior intelligence.
With that, Serene whipped out her second blade and tossed it to the young Terine, who stood at the front of the group. The reddish gold-haired girl caught the sword with a confused look.
Defend yourself!
Serene raised her blade and fell into an attack stance. Terine brought up the sire clumsily, trying to imitate Serene's posture. Terine abandoned the stance, swinging her sire in wild two-handed sweeps. Serene easily batted the girl's sword away and placed a thrust directly between her breasts.
You're dead. Fencing does not depend on strength. It requires skill and precision. Only use one hand. You'll have better control and reach that way. Turn your body a little to the side. It allows for a greater lunging distance and makes you more difficult to hit.
As she spoke, Serene brought out a bundle of thin sticks she'd had made earlier. They were, of course, poor substitutes for a real sword, but they would do until the armorer finished the practice sires. After each woman received a weapon, Serene began to teach them how to lunge. It was difficult work, much more difficult than Serene had expected. She considered herself a decent fencer, but it had never occurred to her that having knowledge was entirely different from explaining that knowledge to others. The women seemed to find ways to hold their weapons that Serene would have thought physically impossible. Eventually, Serene left them to practice their thrusts. She wouldn't trust them to spar with one another until they had proper face masks and clothing. She seated herself beside Mikkel.
Oh.
Exhausting work, cousin.
You have no idea. Are you sure you don't want to give it a try?
I may be flamboyant at times, cousin, but I'm not stupid. King Iadon would blacklist any man who took part in such a supposedly demeaning activity. Being on the king's bad side is fine if you happen to be Eondel, but I'm just a simple merchant. I can't afford royal displeasure.
I'm sure.
Serene watched the women trying to master their lunges.
I don't think I taught them very well.
Better than I could have done.
I could have done better.
Oh, really?
Of course. She didn't teach them about riposting or proper form, and she didn't even bother with tournament rules.
You know about fencing?
I read a book on it.
Then she reached over to slap away Deorn's hand, which was poking her with a stick he had taken from Serene's pile.
The sad thing is, she probably did. Just so she could try and impress you.
I think Chaos must be the most intelligent little girl I've ever met.
She's smart, but don't let her impress you too much. She's still only a child. She may comprehend like a woman, but she still reacts like a little girl.
I still think she's astounding.
Oh, she's that. It only takes Chaos a few hours to devour a book, and her language learning ability is unreal. I feel sorry for Deorn sometimes. He tries his best, but I think he just feels inadequate. Chaos can be domineering, if you haven't noticed. But smart or not, they're still children, and they're still a pain to take care of.
As Serene watched, her eyes fell on the doorway. It was open, and two figures watched the women practice. The ladies fell still, as Lords Eondel and Shuden, realizing they had been noticed, slipped into the room. The two men, though very different in age, were reportedly becoming good friends. Both were something of outsiders in Aerilon. Shuden, a foreigner with dark skin, and Eondel, a former soldier, whose very presence seemed to offend. If Eondel's presence was distasteful to the women, however, Shuden's more than made up for it. A serious wave of blushing ran through the fencers as they realized that the handsome Jinduese lord had been watching them. Several of the younger girls clutched friends' arms for support. Shuden himself flushed at the attention. Eondel, however, ignored the women's reactions. He walked among the would-be fencers, his eyes contemplative. Finally, he picked up a spare length of wood, stepped into a fencing posture, and began a series of swipes and thrusts. After testing the weapon, he nodded to himself, set it aside, then moved toward one of the women.
Hold the wood like so.
He positioned her fingers.
You were gripping it so tightly you lost flexibility. Now place your thumb along the top of the hilt and keep it pointed in the right direction. Step back and thrust.
Ha!
The woman, Eitere, complied. Flustered that Eondel had dared touch her wrist, her thrust, amazingly, was straight and well-aimed, a fact that surprised no one more than Eitere herself. Eondel moved through the group, carefully correcting posture, grip, and stance. He took each woman in turn, giving advice to their several individual problems. After just a few brief minutes of instruction, the women's attacks were more focused and accurate than Serini would have thought possible. Eondel backed away from the women with a satisfied eye.
I hope you aren't offended by my intrusion, Your Highness.
Not at all, my lord.
You are obviously talented, but you seem to have had little experience in training others.
Serini nodded. Eondel was a military commander. He had probably spent decades instructing novices in the basics of fighting.
You know quite a bit about fencing, my lord.
It interests me, and I have visited Douladel on numerous occasions. The Dulas refuse to recognize a man's fighting ability unless he can fence, no matter how many battles he's won.
Serini stood, reaching over and pulling out her practice sires.
Care to spar then, my lord?
I have never sparred with a woman before, Your Highness. I don't think it would be proper.
Nonsense!
She tossed him a sword.
Defend yourself!
Eondel stumbled at first, taken aback by her sudden offense. However, his warrior training soon took control, and he began to parry Serini's attack with amazing skill. Eondel threw himself into the bout with determination. His blade whipped through the air so quickly, it was impossible to follow, and only years of training and drills told Serini where to parry. The women paused to gawk as their two instructors moved across the floor, engaged in intense battle. Eondel was too good for her. She could hold him, but was so busy with defense that she had no time to attack. With sweat streaming down her face, Serini became acutely aware that everyone in the room was watching her. At that moment, something changed in Eondel. His stance weakened slightly, and Serini struck reflexively.
I have no choice but to yield, my lady.
Suddenly, Serini felt very ashamed for putting Eondel in a situation where he had obviously let her win, lest he make her look bad in front of the others. Eondel bowed, and Serini was left feeling silly. They walked back to the side of the room, accepting cups from Lukel.
That was a brilliant display from the both of you.
Eondel regarded his cup, eyebrows raised skeptically.
It's only water?
Water's good for you, my lord.
I'm not so sure about that. Where did you get it?
I had it boiled and then poured between two buckets to restore its flavor. I wasn't going to have the women falling over each other in drunken stupors while they tried to practice.
Aerilish wine isn't that strong, cousin.
It's strong enough. Drink up, Lord Eondel. We wouldn't want you to get dehydrated.
Eondel complied, though he maintained his look of dissatisfaction. Serini turned back toward her students, intending to order them to their practicing. However, their attention had been captured by something else. Lord Shuden stood near the back of the room. His eyes were closed as he moved slowly through a delicate set of motions. His taut muscles ripped as his hands spun in controlled loops, his body flowing in response. Even though his motions were slow and precise, there was sweat glistening on his skin. It was like a dance. Shuden took long steps, legs rising high in the air, toes pointed, before placing them on the floor. His arms were always moving, his muscles stretched tightly, as if he were struggling against some unseen force. Slowly, Shuden accelerated. As if building in tension, Shuden swept faster and faster, his steps becoming leaps, his arms whipping. The women watched in silence, their eyes wide, more than one jaw gaping open. Shuden folded his arms inward like two heavy gates swinging shut. Then he bowed his head.
Merciful Domine, I'll never get them to focus.
Shuden's an interesting lad. He complains repeatedly about the way women chase him, but he can't resist the urge to show off. Despite it all, he's still a man, and he's still rather young.
Serini nodded as Shuden completed his ritual. then turned sheepishly as he realized how much attention he had drawn. He quickly wove his way through the women with downcast eyes, joining Serini and Eondale.
That was unexpected.
I apologize, Lady Serini. Your sparring made me want to exercise. I thought everyone would be so busy practicing that they wouldn't notice me.
Women always notice you, my friend. Next time you complain about being mauled by adoring women, I'll point out this little fiasco.
What was that exercise? I've never seen anything like it.
We call it Cheishan. It's a kind of warm-up, a way to focus your mind and body when preparing for a battle.
It's impressive.
I'm just an amateur. I lack speed and focus. There are men in Jindo who can move so quickly you grow dizzy watching them.
All right, ladies!
Serini turned to the women, most of whom were still staring at Shuden.
Thank Lord Shuden for his exhibition later. Right now you have some lunges to practice. Don't think I'm going to let you leave after just a few minutes of work.
Oh, my sake.
Serini took up her sire and began the practice session anew.
They'll be devilishly sore tomorrow.
You say that with such passion, my lady. One is inclined to think you're enjoying the prospect.
It'll be good for them. Most of those women are so pampered that they've never felt anything more serious than the prick of a stitching needle.
I'm sorry I missed the practice. I haven't watched a Cheishan in decades.
You've seen one before?
I've seen many things, my lady. A seance life is very long.
Serini nodded. They walked down a street in Kei, the enormous wall of Elantris looming in the background. Dozens of street vendors offered their wares eagerly as she passed, recognizing from her dress that she was a member of the court. Kei existed to support the Aerilish nobility, and it catered to very pompous tastes. Gold-plated cups, exotic spices, and extravagant clothes all vied for her attention, though most of it just made her feel sick to her stomach. From what she understood, these merchants were the only real middle class left in Averlon. In Kei, they competed for King Aedon's favor, and hopefully a title, usually at the expense of their competitors, a few peasants, and their dignity. Averlon was quickly becoming a nation of fervent, even terrified, commercialism. Success no longer brought just wealth, and failure no longer just poverty. Income determined just how close one was to being sold into virtual slavery. She was relieved to finally turn a corner and see the Karathi Chapel. She resisted the urge to sprint the rest of the way, keeping her pace steady until she reached the doors to the broad building and slipped in. Serini dropped a few coins, nearly the last of the money she had brought with her from Teod, into the donations box, then went looking for the priest. The chapel felt comfortable to Serini. Unlike Dorethi chapels, which were austere and formal, hung with shields, spears, and the occasional tapestry, Karathi chapels were more relaxed.
Hello, child.
Omine, the priest, was standing next to one of the far windows, looking out at the city.
Hello, Father Omine. Am I bothering you?
Of course not, child. Come, how have you been? I missed you at the sermon last night.
I'm sorry, Father Omine. There was a ball I had to attend.
Ah, do not feel guilty, child. Socializing is not to be underestimated, especially when one is new in town.
His small stature wasn't usually so noticeable. Omine had constructed a podium at the front of the chapel to fit his size, and while he gave sermons, it was hard to distinguish his height. Standing next to the man, however, Serini couldn't help feeling that she was towering over him. He was terribly short. Even for an Aureline, the top of his head barely reaching her chest.
You are troubled by something, child?
He was mostly bald and wore a loose-fitting robe tied at the waist with a white sash. He was a good man, something Serini couldn't say about everyone, even priests.
I wasn't sure who else to ask, Father. I need to do a widow's trial, but no one will explain what it is.
That would be confusing for a newcomer.
Why won't anyone explain it to me?
It is a semi-religious ceremony left over from days when the Elantrians ruled. Anything involving the city is a taboo topic in Aerilon, especially for the faithful.
Well, then how am I going to learn what's expected of me?
Do not get frustrated, child. It is taboo, but only by custom, not by doctrine. I don't think Domi would have any objection to my assuaging your curiosity.
Thank you, Father.
Since your husband died, you are expected to show your grief openly. Otherwise, the people won't think you loved him.
But I didn't love him. Not really. I didn't even know him.
Nonetheless, it would be proper for you to do a trial. The severity of a widow's trial is an expression of how important she thought her union, and how much she respected her husband. To go without one, even for an outsider, could be a bad sign.
But wasn't it a pagan ritual?
Not really. The Elantrians started it, but it had nothing to do with their religion. It was simply an act of kindness that developed into a benevolent and worthy tradition.
Honestly, I'm surprised to hear you speak that way about the Elantrians, Father.
Just because the Dorethi Artefs hated the Elantrians doesn't mean that Domi did, child. I do not believe they were gods, and many of them had inflated opinions of their own majesty. But I had a number of friends in their ranks. The Sheod took men both good and bad, selfish and selfless. Some of the most noble men I ever knew lived in that city. I was very sorry to see what happened to them.
Was it Domi, Father? Did he curse them, as they say?
Everything happens according to Domi's will, child. However, I do not think that curse is the right word. At times, Domi sees fit to send disasters upon the world. Other times, he will give the most innocent of children a deadly disease. These are no more curses than what happened to Elantris. They are simply the workings of the world. All things must progress, and progression is not always a steady incline. Sometimes we must fall. Sometimes we will rise. Some must be hurt while others have fortune, for that is the only way we can learn to rely on one another. As one is blessed, it is his privilege to help those whose lives are not as easy. Unity comes from strife, child.
So you don't think the Elantrians, what's left of them, are devils?
Sprakis, as the Fjordels call them? No. Though I hear that is what this new Gjorn teaches, I fear his pronouncements will only bring hatred.
That may be what he wants.
What purpose could that accomplish?
I don't know.
I cannot believe any follower of God, even a Gjorn, would do such a thing.
Omine took an abstracted look as he considered the prospect, a slight frown on his face.
Father? Father?
At the second prod, Omine shook his head, as if startled to realize she was still there.
I'm sorry, child. What were we discussing?
You never finished telling me what a widow's trial was.
Ah, yes, the widow's trial. Put simply, child, you are expected to do some favor for the country. The more you loved your husband, and the more lofty your station, the more extravagant your trial is supposed to be. Most women give food or clothing to the peasantry. The more personal your involvement, the better impression you give. The trial is a method of service, a means of bringing humility to the exalted.
But where will I get the money?
Serini hadn't decided just how to go about asking her new father for a stipend.
Money? Why, you're one of the richest people in Aerilon. Didn't you know that?
What?
You inherited Prince Raoden's estate, child. He was a very wealthy man. His father made sure of that. Under King Iadon's government, it would not be good for the crown prince to be any less rich than a duke. By the same token, it would be a source of extreme embarrassment to him if his daughter-in-law weren't fabulously wealthy. All you need to do is speak to the royal treasurer, and I'm certain he will take care of you.
Thank you, Father. I have work to do.
Your visit was welcome, child. That is what I'm here for.
However, she could tell that soon after making the comment, he had already forgotten her presence, traveling, once again, the long roads within his mind. Eishi waited for her outside, hovering beside the door with characteristic patience.
I don't see why you're so worried. Omine liked Elantris. He wouldn't have anything against your entering his chapel.
Eishi pulsed slightly. He hadn't entered a Karathi chapel since the day many years ago when Sinelane, the patriarch of Shu Korath, had thrown him out of one.
It is all right, my lady. I have a feeling that no matter what the priest may say, both of us will be happier if we stay out of one another's sight.
I disagree, but I don't want to argue it. Did you hear anything of our conversation?
Seons have very good ears, my lady.
You don't have ears at all. What did you think?
Well, it sounds like a good way for my lady to gain some notoriety in the city.
My thought exactly.
One other thing, my lady. You two spoke of the Derethi Gion and Elantris. The other night, when I was inspecting the city, I noticed the Gion Wraithen walking the city wall of Elantris. I'd gone back several nights now and have found him there on a couple of occasions. He appears quite friendly with the captain of the Elantris City Guard.
What is he trying to do with that city?
It baffles me as well, my lady.
Serini tried to piece together what she knew of the Gion's actions and Elantris. She could make no connections. However, as she thought, something else occurred to her. Perhaps she could solve one of her other problems and inconvenience the Gion at the same time.
Maybe I don't need to know what he's doing to block him.
It certainly would help, my lady.
I don't have that luxury. But we do know this. If the Gion wants the people to hate the Elantrians, then it's my job to see the opposite happens.
What are you planning, my lady?
You'll see. First, let's get back to my rooms. I've wanted to speak with Father for some time now.
Ine? I'm glad you called. I've been worried about you.
Evanteo's glowing head hovered before Serini.
You could have sent for me at any time, Father.
I didn't want to intrude, honey. I know how you value your independence.
Independence is second to duty right now, Father. Nations are falling. We don't have time to worry about one another's feelings.
I stand corrected.
What is happening in Teod, Father?
It isn't good. These are dangerous times. I just had to put down another Yeskeri mystery cult. They always seem to spring up when an eclipse is near.
Serini shivered. The mystery cultists were an odd bunch. One her father didn't like to deal with.
There's more, isn't there?
I'm afraid there is, Ine. Something worse.
What?
You know Ashgris, the Fjordal ambassador.
Yes. What has he done? Denounced you in public?
No. Something worse. He left.
Left? The country? After all the trouble Fjordan went through to get representatives back in?
That's right, Ine. He took his entire entourage, made a last speech on the docks, and left us behind. There was a disturbing air of finality about the event.
Oh, this isn't good.
Fjordan had been dogmatic about keeping a presence in Teod. If Ashgrass had left, he had gone in response to a personal command from Wern. It smelled of their having given up on Teod for good.
I'm scared, Innie.
The words chilled her like nothing else. Her father was the strongest man she knew.
You shouldn't say things like that.
Only to you, Ine. I want you to understand how serious the situation is.
I know. I understand. There's a Gion here in Kei, but I think I can handle him, Father. We're keeping our eyes on one another.
Which one is it?
His name is Wraithen.
I don't know, my Sir Ine. Do you know who that is? Wraithen was the Gion assigned to Duladan the 6 months before it collapsed.
I guessed that was who he was.
I want you out of there, Serini. That man is dangerous. Do you know how many people died in the Duladan Revolution? There were tens of thousands of casualties.
I know, Father.
I'm sending a ship for you. We'll make our stand back here, where no Gion is welcome.
I'm not leaving, Father.
Serini, be logical. Everyone knows the Aurelish government is a mess. If this Gion toppled Duladan, then he'll have no trouble doing the same to Aurelon. You can't hope to stop him when the entire country is against you.
I have to stay, Father, regardless of the situation.
What loyalty do you owe them, Serini? A husband you never knew? A people who are not your own?
I am the daughter of the king.
You are the daughter of a king here as well. What is the difference? Here, the people know and respect you.
They know me, Father, but respect...
Serini sat back, beginning to feel sick. The old feelings were returning. the feelings that had made her willing to leave her homeland in the first place, abandoning all she knew in favor of a foreign land.
I don't understand, Ini.
Oh, Father, you could never see it. To you, I was a delight, your beautiful, intelligent daughter. No one would dare tell you what they really thought of me.
What are you talking about?
Father, I'm 25 years old, and I am blunt, conniving, and oft-times offensive. You must have noticed that no man ever sought my hand.
I thought about it.
I was the king's spinster daughter, a shrew no one wanted to touch. Men laughed at me behind my back. No one would dare approach me with romantic intentions, for it was well known that whoever did would be mocked by his peers.
I just thought you were independent, that you didn't consider any of them worthy of your time.
You love me, Father. No parent wants to admit that his daughter is unattractive. The truth of the matter is, no man wants an intelligent wife.
That isn't true. Your mother is brilliant.
You are an exception, Father, which is why you can't see it. A strong woman is not an asset in this world, not even in Teod, which I always claim is so much more advanced than this continent. It really isn't all that different, Father. They say they give their women more freedom, but there's still the impression that the freedom was theirs to give in the first place. In Teod, I'm an unmarried daughter. Here in Aerilon, I'm a widowed wife. That is an enormous distinction. As much as I love Teod, I would have to live with the constant knowledge that no one wants me. Here, at least, I can try to convince myself that someone was willing to have me, even if it was for political reasons.
We can find you someone else.
I don't think so, Father. Now that Teon has children, no husband of mine would end up being on the throne, which is the only reason anyone in Teod would consider marrying me. No one under Dorethi control will consider marriage with a Teo. That only leaves Aerilon, where my betrothal contract forbids me from marrying again. No, there's no one for me now, Father. The best I can do is make use of my situation here. At least I can command a measure of respect in Aerilon without having to worry about how my actions will affect my future marriageability.
I see.
Father, do I need to remind you not to worry about me? We have much larger problems to deal with.
I can't help worrying about you, Lekistek. You're my only daughter.
Serene shook her head, determined to change the topic before she started crying, suddenly very ashamed for destroying his idyllic vision of her. Serene searched for anything she could say that would divert the conversation.
Uncle Kaiine is here in Kei.
Do not mention his name to me, Ini.
But...
No!
All right. Then tell me about Fjordin instead. What do you think Wern is planning?
This time I really have no idea. It must be something massive. Borders are closing to Teoish merchants north and south, and our ambassadors are beginning to disappear. I am very close to calling them home.
And your spies?
Are vanishing almost as quickly. I haven't been able to get anyone into the Velding in over a month. And Domai only knows what Wern and the Giorns are scheming in there. Sending spies to Fjordin these days is almost the same as sending them to die.
But you do it anyway.
I have to. What we find could end up saving thousands, though that doesn't make it any easier. I just wish I could get someone into Dakor.
The monastery?
Yes. We know what the other monasteries do. Wrathbor trains assassins, Fjeldor spies, and most of the others, simple warriors. Dakor, however, worries me. I've heard some horrible stories about that monastery. I can't fathom why anyone, even the Dorethi, would do such things.
Does it look like Fjordan's massing for war?
I can't tell. It doesn't appear so, but who knows? Wern could send a multi-nation army in our direction at almost a moment's notice. One small consolation is I don't think he knows we understand that fact. Unfortunately, the knowledge does put me in a difficult position.
What do you mean?
If Wern declares holy war on us, then it will mean the end of Teod. We can't stand against the united might of the eastern countries, Ini. I will not sit back and watch my people be slaughtered.
You would consider surrendering?
A king's duty is to protect his people. When faced with the choice of conversion or letting my people be destroyed, I think I would have to choose conversion.
You would be as spineless as the Jindoese.
The Jindoese are a wise people, Serene. They did what they needed to do to survive.
But that would mean giving up.
It would mean doing what we have to do. I won't do anything yet. As long as there are two nations left, we have hope. However, if Aerilon falls, I will be forced to surrender. We cannot fight the entire world, Ini. No more than one grain of sand can fight an entire ocean.
But...
Serene could see her father's predicament. Fighting Fjordan on the battlefield would be an exercise in complete futility. Convert or die, both options were sickening. But conversion was obviously the more logical choice. However, a quiet voice inside her argued that it was worth dying for, if death would prove that truth was more powerful than physical strength. She had to make sure her father was never given that choice. If she could stop Hrathen, then she might be able to stop Wern, for a time at least.
I'm definitely staying, Father.
I know, Lady. It will be dangerous.
I understand. However, if Aerilon does fall, then I would probably rather be dead than watch what happens in Teod.
Be careful, and keep an eye on that Gion. Oh, by the way, if you find out why Wern is sinking Aedon's ships, tell me.
What?
You didn't know?
Know what?
King Aedon has lost nearly his entire merchant fleet. The official reports claim that the sinkings are the work of pirates, some remnant of Dreok Crushthroat's navy. However, my sources link the sinkings with Fjordan.
So that's what it was.
What?
4 days ago, I was at a party. A servant delivered a message to the king, and whatever it was unsettled the king a great deal.
That would be about the right time frame. I found out 2 days ago myself.
Why would Wern sink innocent merchant vessels? Unless... Eidos Domai. If the king loses his income, then he would be in danger of losing his throne.
Is all that nonsense about rank being tied to money true?
Insanely true. Aedon takes away a family's title if they can't maintain their income. If he lost his own source of wealth, it would destroy the foundation of his rule. Hrathen could replace him with someone else, a man more willing to accept Shudereth, without even bothering to start a revolution.
That sounds feasible. Aedon asked for such a situation by concocting such an unstable basis for rule.
It's probably Tel-Rai. That's why he spent so much money on that ball. The Duke wants to show that he's financially sound. I would be very surprised if there wasn't a mountain of Fjordel gold behind his expenditures.
What are you going to do?
Stop him, even though it hurts. I really don't like Aedon, Father.
Unfortunately, it looks like Hrathen has chosen our allies for us.
Yes. He has placed me with Elantris and Aedon. Not a very enviable position.
We all do the best with what Domai has given us.
You sound like a priest.
I have found reason to become very religious lately.
A wise choice, Father. If Domai were ever going to help us, it would be now. The end of Teod means the end of Shu'Korath.
For a time, perhaps. Truth can never be defeated, Serene, even if people do forget about it occasionally.
Serene was in bed, the lights down. Eishi hovered on the far side of the room. His light dimmed so much that he was barely an outline of Aeon Eishi against the wall. The conversation with her father had ended an hour ago, but its implications would likely plague her mind for months. She had never considered surrender an option, but now it looked almost inevitable. The prospect worried her. She knew that it was unlikely that Wern would let her father continue to rule, even if he did convert. She also knew that Evan Teo would willingly give his life if it would spare his people. She also thought about her own life, and her mixed memories of Teod. The kingdom contained the things she loved most. Her father, brother, and mother. The forests around the port city of Teoen, the capital, were another very fond memory. She remembered the way the snow settled on the landscape. One morning she had awoken to find everything outside coated in a beautiful film of ice. The trees had looked like jewels sparkling in the winter daylight. Yet Teyode also reminded her of pain and loneliness. It represented her exclusion from society and her humiliation before men. She had established early in life that she had a quick wit and an even quicker tongue. Both things had set her apart from other women. Not that some of them weren't intelligent. They just had the wisdom to hide it until they were married. Not all men wanted a stupid wife, but there also weren't a lot of men who felt comfortable around a woman they assumed was their intellectual superior. By the time Serini had realized what she was doing to herself, she had found that the few men who might have accepted her were already married. Desperate, she had ferreted out the masculine opinion of her in court and had been mortified to learn just how much they mocked her. After that, it had only grown worse, and she had only grown older. In a land where nearly every woman was at least engaged by the age of 18, she was an old maid by 25. A very tall, gangly, argumentative old maid. The sound hadn't come from the hallway or window, but from inside her room. She sat up as she prepared to jump away. Only then did she realize it wasn't actually coming from her room, but from the wall beside her room. She frowned in confusion. There weren't any rooms on the other side. She was at the very edge of the palace. She had a window looking out over the city. The noise was not repeated, and determined to get some sleep despite her anxieties, Serini told herself that it had simply been the building settling.